Welcome, 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 my friends, to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. Just two, count them, two more days until my birthday, and I'm still waiting on those adoring fish fry and fan gifts to arrive in the mail. Probably a postal service problem, right? Yeah, totally. This week, ladies and gentlemen, we're tackling one of the biggest themes at this year's Design Automation Conference. Heck, one of the biggest themes in all of EE this year. Big data. More specifically, we're talking about how EDA can help solve our big data woes. Let me bring in Michael Munsey from Dassault Systèmes to talk about all of this and more. Thank you so much for joining me today, Michael.
Thank you.
So first off, for my audience who may not know, what do you guys do?
So Dassault Systèmes, we're known as a 3D experience company. We started off as a 3D CAD company and then brought in other pieces of technology. We brought in a PLM system, some multi-physics modeling solutions, and then we've grown over the years to actually encompass 12 brands across 12 different industries. And specifically the past couple of years, we've been really focusing in on the semiconductor industry. Because we've seen that in the semiconductor industry, there are a lot of system-level issues that have been solved in other industries that we serve, like the transportation, mobility, mainly automotive, aerospace, and defense. And we have solutions that have worked very well for those industries for many, many years. So the past couple of years, we've been working on taking those solutions and creating a semiconductor solution based off of this proven technology, and now we're rolling it out to the semiconductor industry.
So, Michael, let's talk about one of the biggest deals in EDA in the semiconductor industry these days, big data. Now, what do you think are the largest challenges for big data in EDA today?
The biggest challenge right now is the data is only as good as what you have available. Now, we've seen a lot of people talking about capturing design data and performing big data analytics on it. That works provided you have all the data. What we've seen, it's very difficult for companies to come up with processes in place to capture everything that they need to capture. Because you think there's multiple tools in the EDA flowchain in different domains. You have system tools, you have functional verification tools, you've got synthesis tools, physical design, custom design. There are a lot of people involved generating a lot of information. And if there's no structured processes to put and capture all that data, then ultimately you will not have a full set of data to actually get good analytics off of. The second challenge is it's not just about the design data and the design results. You got to think about the entire ecosystem. A semiconductor company has product engineering that sets up project schedules and requirement systems and handles issue and defects across entire systems. You have manufacturing teams. If you're a fabless company, you have teams that interface to outsourced manufacturing. If you're an IDM, you have your own manufacturing information as well. So to get the true analysis that you need a comprehensive view that looks at all this data to be really able to do predictive analysis on what problems you're trying to solve. So the largest problem we see is that it's a great goal, but without being able to put the methodology and the systems in place to capture all that data, it's going to only be somewhat effective. And what we're focusing on at Dassault is that, again, through other industries, we've been putting processes in place in terms of design processes, manufacturing processes that allow us to have a great methodology at capturing all this data now. And we're looking at ways of now bringing this to the semiconductor industry. And where we're starting right now is through a piece of our technology called requirements-driven verification, which basically will capture a whole design process and verification process. We can automate the capture of this data now. And the very first types of analysis that we're doing on this data is we call it a decision support system. Imagine you're doing physical design and you're trying to close timing, you're trying to close power. So typically you run different experiments and you might run 10 or 12 different place and route experiments with different constraint files, tweaks to the design, and you get a bunch of results out. But it's often like pushing a balloon. If you improve one area, another area gets worse. And then you look at the next result, well, you fixed the one that got worse, but the one you thought you fixed gets worse now. And the minute you have more than two tests to look at, the problem becomes exponentially difficult to try to solve. In our Simulia brand, there are some predictive analysis techniques that actually look at multiple groups of tests and analyze what inputs generated what outputs and what desired results, and now begin to guide you in a certain direction. So it'll be able to look at all your design constraint files and saying, well, if you use these design constraints and couple it with these design constraints from this test, you begin to assemble a view that leads you down the right path. And so we're looking first at this very specific functional process to begin to make improvements of the overall design process to achieve design closure. So the very first step that we're looking at right now is very much at the role level of providing the analysis capabilities to take the data analysis problem and make it a lot simpler and provide some intelligence at that level.
So let's talk about the future a little bit, Michael, here. What do you think the future of big data and analytics is in EDA?
So the obvious next step is to break out from the role level and now look across the entire development platform. And when I mean development, I mean all the way from system planning through manufacturing. So once you begin to capture enough data, you're start able to do a different level of analysis. So it moves from looking at how to make my job better to now how do you make the entire process better. So you could start making assumptions of if you have a project, you know what the results are. You also know who worked on the project, so you can start getting a notion of how good design teams are. You also start bringing in scheduling information, and you can start make predictions of how design teams work against certain schedules. You can start bringing issue and defects data in and see how many errors certain design teams made versus other design teams. And then you start building a much larger picture from product planning through design to manufacturing that you're now able to really start predicting at a beginning of a new design, what are my chances of achieving this schedule and where are the problems are going to be? And when you start looking at that data over time and you start seeing issues pop up along the way, well, if I need extra resources now to work on this project, what teams have I had that have done similar projects in the past? Should I apply to this team now to help fix this problem? And then how is that going to impact my other projects I have going on where I might start borrowing people from? So it goes from a role-based analysis to a system analysis across a whole design team and then across multiple design teams throughout a whole company.
That makes sense. Now, Michael, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. I know you're a musician, and I know you play a lot of different instruments. So why do you think there is such an overlap with musicians in engineering in particular?
It's a right brain, left brain issue. You know, after spending a day of doing pure analysis and analytics and thinking about design problems in a very structured way, everybody needs a creative outlet. So music is one of the best ways to be creative. Go out there, just be as creative as possible and let your other side of your brain work.
I love it. Well, Michael, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Amelia.
Now, folks, if you didn't catch earlier that, yes, my birthday is coming up very shortly. Well, it is. And this week, I have a very special What I Would Like from Kickstarter for My Birthday Kickstarter Corner. Now, these days, there seems to be a new subscription box service popping up just about every other week for all sorts of different interests. I get Gray's snack boxes twice a month, and they're really fabulous, FYI. Anyway, but for my birthday this year, I want all of you, yes, each and every one of you, to make HackerBox a reality. What is HackerBox? It's a monthly subscription box full of surprises for electronics hobbyists, computer geeks, makers, and hackers. Oh, yes. While each monthly HackerBox is a surprise, the folks at HackerBox contend that they have a lot of box contents in the pipeline. The general structure of each month's box contents contains a primary project, parts or modules, tools or supplies, and some promo items as well. And there is even sometimes a secondary project as well. A couple examples of projects include single board computers, retro gaming, such as the Use Box, CW Morse code keyer / decoder, and hacker multi-tool, such as the Bus Pirate. There is also a bunch of different parts and modules included in each month's kit, including AVR Arduino modules, Wi-Fi modules, flash memory, and Bluetooth modules, just to name a few. Each month's box also includes a wide variety of tools needed for each project, and a little swag or promo items as well. So, you're intrigued. I know you are. Heck, I'm working on getting these guys on my show. But, for now, if you want any further information on how you can get a hacker box delivered to your door, I've included a link on this week's Fish Frying page that will take you directly there. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go directly to HackerBox. You heard it here first, my friends. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. We also have a YouTube channel, keyword, EE Journal, that is chock full of all kinds of techie videos. Our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to that EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed via Podbean or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you everyone for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of August 7th, 2015, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.